Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. And today we're going to continue our discussions about arts, culture, and cultural policy. And I'm very pleased to have as a guest a dancer and choreographer, Ramli Ibrahim. He's also the artistic director and chairman of Sutra Foundation and recipient of India's fourth highest civilian award, the Padma Shri, for distinguished service in the arts. He received that last year, 2018. Thank you so much, Ramli, for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Let's talk about this show that's coming up next month in April, between April 10th and 14th, Odissi on High.
Right.
And I know you're a exponent of the art of
yes.
Odissi dance. Tell us about it. What exactly can somebody who's never been to an Indian classical dance performance expect to see?
Well, that's a lot, Sharad, because we have, in a way, planted Odissi in Malaysia. It's one of the eight classical dance form. Odissi on High is its second season. Basically, we want to take it to India, and we're going to take to eight major cities of India after the Kuala Lumpur second season, which is going to happen at KL Pack from the 10th to the 14th, and then taking it to Seremban and Malacca as a kind of a small Malaysia tour.
And this is classical or is it contemporary?
You know, that's the word. The word contemporary can be also used in the form of traditional, because you know, I think we need to look at modernity and contemporary in the context of Asia and not just from the context of Europe and New York, because that's their milieu. So a lot of dancers in India is saying that we are also doing contemporary, because all the works that we're doing are contemporary, but these are contemporary traditional works. So that's true also to one's extent. So the work I'm doing has even modernity inserted in many ways, but within the context of the classicism of Odissi.
Okay. So what is your role in it? Are you a dancer, choreographer? Are you, you know, executive producer? What is your role?
I am all of that. I not just make a cameo role, but I am actually dancing in the work. I am also the artistic director together with another friend of mine who is the guru of Rudraksha Foundation. We are collaborating this work, Odissi on High, with another amazing group of dancers, mainly male dancers, five male dancers from Odisha. So this represents
from the state of Odisha in
correct.
India. Okay.
So this also represents one of the really significant cultural collaboration between India and Malaysia, and then taking it out all over Malaysia and India.
People haven't heard this extraordinary story. How did you?
You haven't heard it.
Well, you know, I've of course read about you and your work in India. I've seen the videos, and the question is, how did you come to have this connection with India? I know you're working within Indian classical dance,
yes.
But to take and actively be part of that scene.
You know, to. What we are doing, people of India think that it's amazing, because we don't just do one or two performances. We do a week season, Sharad. That cannot even happen in Chennai or in New Delhi. So there is a kind of a mainstream followers of Sutra in our production. And, you know, we have kind of uplift the Indian culture and dance into a state where you know, some former minister might say that, you know, you can't be so elitist in the work that you do, like Sutra or Ramli Ibrahim. So we have lifted that Indian classical dance vision from just a kind of lots of jewelry kind of thing into really, you know, the way that we present it with LED screen, with the props, with a kind of really truly kind of international presentation.
Right, and you've done things in situ. I mean, you've actually presented dance in temple complexes and stuff.
Not only that, we have performed in the major halls of the world, including Carnegie Hall, Kennedy Center, Sydney Opera House, Esplanade Singapore, and in the major theaters of India. So I mean the days when only kind of cats and that is performed there. It's over. You know, Indian classical dance have come and attained international recognition.
I mean, it's extraordinary that a Malaysian should be also, you know, in the forefront of this. I want to ask you, though, about talent. I mean, when you think about your work and your vision for the classical dance in this particular stream, are you limited by the talent that you can find here, or are you sourcing?
No, we have a lot of talent. Recently, we have opened up the Sutra outreach program in places outside Kuala Lumpur to empower youth. So 18 of the dancers performing here are the very young kids that I have kind of invested on in Kuala Selangor, Kajang, Ladang Sungai Chor, and Rawang, and they are performing now. Thank God for that, because I thought that too many classes in Kuala Lumpur already, and it was saturated. And
is there talent out there?
Yes, I think talents are everywhere, but talents with brain, talents who you can groom and have a kind of consistency. Talents have got to be groomed, otherwise talents are wasted.
Is it primarily parents? Parents have this sense that this is an activity they'd like to have their children start with, and therefore bring their kids to class. Or, you know, if the parents don't have that or think, well, actually, why should, especially for male child,
yes,
I mean, why should I put my child in a dance class?
Exactly. I mean, that's always a problem, because, you know, that's the basic question, you know. I mean, oh, how wonderful you dance, but what do you do for a living? But, you know, I mean, parents want the kids, especially the male children, to have something that security of a proper job, you know. But I am a living example of someone who is dancing full time and
rejected
it. But you got
a first degree in engineering?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But I think I followed my bliss, and thank God for that, you know. So so I feel that as someone like yourself, who are artistically, the temperament is artistic, they have to follow this call.
I like. Thank you very much for that compliment. I like the idea that I'm following my artistic, impulses. Very quickly, this audition, how you say that there's going to be performance 10th to the 14th here in Kuala Lumpur and also in Seremban before it travels to India.
Correct.
And what are the cities in India that it's going to be going to?
Well, amazing cities. We're going to Bhubaneswar, Kolkata, New Delhi, Mumbai, Pune, Chennai, Hyderabad, and Bangalore. That's 8 major cities of India.
Right. So it looks like you're going to go around the subcontinent.
Yes, but Sharad, you know, I mean, I always feel that business and culture come together, and I was attracting also the business people in India, whether it is from the Malaysian Indian Business Council or the ASEAN Indian Business Council. Here, we are seeing that, especially when you are in India, the top people in India are the patrons of the arts, and it's important to be seen and to come together in that wave with Sutra to project Malaysia as not just a kind of a halfway house of conventions, but also a presentation of culture at its highest.
Right, wonderful. We'll take a short break and we'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. My guest today, Ramli Ibrahim, Artistic Director and Chairman of Sutra Foundation, of course, a well-known dancer in his own right and a choreographer, recipient of one of India's highest civilian awards, the Padma Shri. I'm wondering, since last year when you received this amazing accolade from India, has anything changed about your ability to influence the way in which the arts is operating in this country?
I don't know. A lot of Malaysians don't even know what a Padma Shri is. But there is another award that I received from the President of India, which is even regarded more prestigious than the Padma Shri, is the Sangeet Natak Academy Award, because these are chosen by the artists, whereas the Padma Shri is very much also a political kind of a move. But Having said that, it's fine, but I feel that in India it means something. It means something, but in Malaysia it's like, you know, everyone thought that like a dato or something like that. Everyone is a dato now, you know, so it doesn't work that much. Certainly it's not been working for me in Malaysia.
So, okay, so awards aside, the fact that you have an institution, that you've done amazing work, you have accolades, does that change your ability to have some leverage when it comes to policymakers? Because policymakers are the ones ultimately who are shaping the enabling infrastructure for artists to work.
Well, you know, the point is there is a great, and Asharat, you know this, there is a great disconnect between artists, scholars, and bureaucrats, the policymakers. And this is unfortunate because it has still continued over these years with Malaysia Baru, Pakatan Harapan thing. And I don't think it has changed very, very much because the ministry has not gone through a makeover, which I think it's sorely needed because I think, unfortunately, they've lost the plot.
Okay, so we're talking not just about the political leadership, the ministers, the deputy
yes.
ministers, we're talking about the civil service, the people who
right.
actually run
right.
it.
Right.
Now, what do you see? I mean, there must be people who are good. I mean, good people with good intentions within the civil service.
Name me one. Because I tried, you know, my office tried to call, Ministry of Culture with regards to the proposal that I have. We haven't, you know, for days and days we've called, but they just won't answer us. So that's the kind of relationship, you know. I mean, there is still in the ministry that kind of civil servant arrogance that they are doing you a favor and not that they are servicing the community.
When do you think they lost the plot? I mean, you've been doing work for decades now. When
yes,
do you
for decades now. And it's really because I think the arts in Malaysia is basically sustained by the artists. The artists themselves are the patron of the art. The artists are putting energy, money into the arts. And actually, there's hardly any funding. And I think, groups, some of the groups that purportedly helping the arts are basically cultural brokers. So I think this is something that the ministry have to really look in properly. And if I were the ministers, I would really turun padang and check up what is truly happening. And the contact, this is the contact between artists, scholars, and bureaucrats needs to be maintained, not just at the federal level, also but at the state level.
Do you think the fact that the ministry that's the competent authority for culture and the arts is also the ministry for tourism, that tourism gets the bigger share of the pie in terms of attention, in terms of allocation and so forth?
But, you know, I mean, the arts and culture part has always been marginalized. You know, it's like when I spoke to recently when I was in a symposium and I was speaking with an Indonesian guy who is actually from the Ministry of Education and Culture. And when I said that I'm, you know, our ministry is tourism and culture and arts, he said that, you know, for us, culture should educate. But for you, culture should are to be sold. I mean, this is the difference, and I just realized that this is the primary philosophical difference between, policymakers is seeing culture, how we can sell culture, rather than how we can educate. And I think Tun M had mentioned the problem with a lot of, say, the Malays is a cultural dilemma. And this is true, and I think we really need to look at, you know, I mean, the Malaysian, the nation, has been given a diet of protein and carbohydrates and not enough trace elements of arts. The vitamins are not there. So, you know, you can say cash is not king and all that, but basically the index of success is always measured with this money thing. So you can be a CEO, you can be also cultural illiterates who who really don't care. So that quality of life is measured in money. And this is the danger when you look at, you know, everything in terms of industry, economy, and all that, and not look at the aspect of social sciences, sustainability, which is very important at the moment. And I'm not just looking at dance, I'm doing a general aspect of arts and culture, which is important in the holistic formation of the persona of the individual and the nation.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. My guest, Ramli Ibrahim, he actually needs no introduction. We've been talking about the arts. We talked about the next production coming out of Sutra, which is Odyssey on High. It's coming out in April 10th to the 14th. But we also talked about larger issues, the enabling environment and the government's role, or lack of it, lack of a coherent role in the promotion of the arts. I want to ask you about other allies. If artists are essentially alone, you know, they're the ones who are kind of pulling the scene up by their own bootstraps. Mm. Have they found any allies in, say, the corporate world, for instance?
The corporate, you know, the CSR program where culture is concerned is almost non-existent, except one or two, you know, maybe Sime Darby doing what kind of a community arts. But for people like me who look at arts as kind of getting that excellent work that we can present ourselves as the face of excellence. It's name me one corporate that is doing that. You know, there's hardly any corporate support. Even though I think the ministry had said that we are going to give 700,000 free of tax exam and all that, but there have not been any takers as far as I'm concerned. So the arts funding has been sustained mainly through individuals or individuals in the corporate, if you know them, who are sympathetic to the arts, but not in terms of a policy vision altogether. You know, certainly there is not that in Malaysia. It's unfortunate. I come from the Royal Military College, and my friends are the who's and who in the corporate world, but it's very difficult to convince them that that quality of life must come from the arts. But they also, when they, of course, all of them envision themselves to be kind of culturally enlightened, but they envision themselves in terms of the Broadway and West End kind of musicals. And they're happy to have Sound of Music, which was done 40 years ago, to come to Malaysia. So that kind of artistic talents and indigenous flowering is not supported by corporates.
So where does the conversation go now? I mean, let's just, you know, take you know, at face value what you're saying about, you know, the ministry losing the plot and corporates not really having a vision, on the individuals within also having a very narrow sense of what is of artistic value that they want to support, right?
Yes.
Driven maybe by American popular culture.
Yes.
But so then what happens next? Is the arts community gathering together to rally resources, present a broad united front in order to change the conversation? Are there any game changers for the arts in the near future?
I really, it's very difficult because it's a kind of a catch-22, you know, because you talk about the whole movement affecting the nation, then you need to have that policy changer. But you look at the national policy, cultural policy itself, it has not been much change, and it's not sufficiently inclusive. And you know, the Malay thing and even the Malay culture is really on the way down. And you know, there are many areas of religious needs reforming, Sharad. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not inclusive enough. It makes the population inhibited, and you know, that sense of joy and celebration of life. And, you know, as you know, that we are all in a doldrums at the moment, and everyone is so negative, and it will take the arts to bring it up again, and it needs that tempering of the arts, music, literature, to bring back again the spirit of joy into the nation, freely.
Okay, in the last minutes that we have, can we go back to this performance happening in April? What is the story of Odyssey on High? What is, and it sounds positive, on High,
yes,
you know, but what is the story of, and what is it drawing inspiration from?
It draws inspiration from two major gurus of Odyssey, the pioneers gurus. And they are a kind of what we call a parampara, a school of Odyssey. You know, we are in Malaysia. I am now the next generation of teacher, though I don't behave like a traditional guru, but I'm the next generation. Even in India, they see me like that. And we have been working on these two gurus and how their work have evolved over the years. And this is amazing, Ishara, because within the last 60 years, Odyssey has become a very exciting, and you look at the repertoire, it has flowered and become something very, very strong, very exciting. And it, at the same time, it corresponds to the global, what you call that kind of thing, push of speed, of flourish, of excitement, and this is what Odyssey on High is about, and that's why it will be attracting the youth very much into this work.
Wow, thank you very much for that. I look forward to seeing the performance, and thank you again for being on the show. I've been speaking to Rami Ibrahim. He is the artistic director and chairman of Sutra Foundation. Also, of course, well known for his work as a dancer and a choreographer, and is recipient of several awards, including one of India's highest civilian awards, the Padma Shri. I'm Sharad Kutan. This has been Let's Talk, only on Astro One.